This morning is taken from Proverbs, the first chapter. We've been in Proverbs 1 before. We're going to be beginning with verse 20 for this morning. We have a few visitors, and so I'd like to, before we get into it, make a very brief explanation of things. When Israel came back from captivity, and through the efforts of Ezra, Nehemiah, whatever, they began to rebuild the temple. And when it was done, the older folks had a tendency to feel downhearted because it wasn't as magnificent as the former temple. And they forgot something very vital. You know, the worship of God doesn't require buildings. I know sometimes, you know, we get visitors and they look at the surroundings and go, there's no candles, there's no stained glass windows, whatever. The building is not the church. The church is the people. And the church is as opulent as the people are spiritual. Sometimes, you know, as we move on into modern times, people have a tendency to think, well, you know, we've got to keep up with the times, and the church has to be more, you know, with it, and they add all these innovations and stuff. They forget that, you know, generally what you find, what we're studying in Micah, is that God has set up his hill, and men have a tendency to slide back from it. They're not progressing on, they get worse, because human nature is what it is, and will always be what it is, but God is what he is. In the Old Testament, in Deuteronomy 4, and just a reminder, in a lot of languages that, you know, that kind of a familiar sound to it, just means two. Anima is law. And so what Deuteronomy is, was the second giving of the law. Why? Because the generation that received it the first time, one, didn't obey it, and two, were destroyed because of it, and so it had to be given again. Exactly the same law, no changes. Man was the problem, not God. In the second giving, what Moses said in Deuteronomy 4 is, you will not add one word to it, and you will not take one word away from it. In the New Testament, now in Deuteronomy it also goes, you know, there's going to be a prophet, you know, Moses says, there's going to be a prophet like me in chapter 18, in verse 18, that, yeah, when he comes, you'll listen to him. You don't change anything until then. But when Jesus came and, you know, gave the New Testament, the feeling of God was the same. I mean, you've noticed, you know, what Paul writes to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 4, 6, you're supposed to learn not to go beyond the things that are written. When Paul is writing the Galatians, he goes, you know, if we are an angel from heaven or any other man preaching any other gospel than which has already been preached, let him be accursed. Revelation ends up in the 22nd chapter in verses 18 and 19, basically saying, you know, if anyone adds to the prophecies of this book, the plagues of the book will be added to him. If anyone takes away from the prophecies of this book, his name will be taken from the tree of life. So there's warnings in the old and new, don't touch anything. Okay? First century, a man could come to God and be saved. The requirements for that salvation haven't changed. God hasn't changed. There's no need for innovations. What it needs is for us to listen to God and start doing it again. Okay. Now, said that just kind of an explanation. You know, if you're looking around and going, kind of a shabby place, well, try meeting in the colonnades of the temple or in the school of Tyrannus or in somebody's house. They did that in the first century. Okay, so, you know, don't judge it by the building, judge it by the word. This is what our purpose here is, to get back to the original message, exactly as it was taught in the first century. Okay? And this is what we're striving to do, judge us by that. Okay? And Proverbs then, as we start our context, first chapter, it starts off in verse 20 that, you know, it talks about wisdom. Now, even as it starts out, there's a lot to be learned here. Sometimes, you know, there's little gems that are buried, you know, in the original language. First of all, the word wisdom is in the plural. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to take on all the wisdoms and all the different kinds and facets of it or whatever. It's an idiomatic way that the Hebrew writes in order to say, this is the wisdom par excellence. Last week we looked in James 3 and 4 about the two kinds of wisdom. You know, the wisdom from above and the wisdom from below. It's not combining all of that. It's going with the wisdom from above and actually the very best of the wisdom from above, if there is such a thing. In the sense that it's all good stuff. In fact, the plural implies, like we said, a wisdom par excellence. Now, if you don't understand what that means, some of you guys play golf. You know, when you're out there playing golf, you know, what does it tell you about the pars of the golf course? You know, some holes are a par 3, some are a par 4. It means the way the thing is constructed, it's expecting you to take 3 shots to get there, or 4. What if you played on a golf course where all of them required, no matter how tough it was, a par 1? It'd be a very excellent course. Requires the excellence of, you know, best from you. And this is what we're looking at here. The wisdom of God, the very best of the wisdom of God, or of wisdom, you know, as you want to look at it. Okay. Now, where do you think that's buried? Secret. Nowhere. I mean, look what it says. Okay. Wisdom, you know, what's she doing? In fact, it says she here in the second phrase. Yeah, it's personifying wisdom. Yeah, it's making wisdom like a person that's trying to get itself out there. In fact, the context I had Dan read in Luke 11, and I think it's verse 27, 27 or 29, whatever. It talks about, you know, Jesus says, this is what the wisdom of God says. Okay, so that personification carries over it in the New Testament. In fact, it might even be full personification in Christ himself. It sure is going to act the same way in Matthew 10, in verse 27. You know, he tells his disciples, what I whisper in your ear, I want you to scream from the rooftops. And that's what wisdom is doing. Okay? Wisdom shouts in the streets. That's where wisdom is. Wisdom lifts up her voice in the square where people, you know, congregate, you know, to have their agoras, their shambles, their marketplaces, where commerce is done. It says, you know, at the head of the busy streets, probably, you know, we're just talking about the crossroads. You know, that's where a road usually starts, you know, and angles off into other roads, the distinct roads. But that's where wisdom is, at the crossroads. Telling everybody, trying to spread itself throughout the world. It's at the entrance of the gates of the city. That's where she utters, you know, her sayings. You know, the gates of the city is where a lot of business was done. That's where the courts were held. That's where you went to talk to the elders about some sort of, you know, court proceeding, some kind of case you had. So wisdom is there. Wisdom's everywhere. God's wisdom, meaning sure it was everywhere, unless you suppress it. Okay. So, verse 3 starts, okay, what is wisdom saying? Okay, a lot of it's a warning. Okay. She starts, how long? Now, this is a very intimate expression. It's a caring expression. How long? Okay, now it's going to give you 3 classes of people, and they're very defined, very instructive, and they're progressive in their culpability and what they're responsible for. How long, O naive ones, will you love simplicity? Don't you find that there's a lot of people nowadays that just want it to be simple? They don't want to get complicated. They don't like school. You know, they don't want to go, you know, very heavy jobs. They just want to, you know, kind of lay back and, in fact, medicate themselves. Either get into the drugs or the alcohol or just, you know, play games all day or watch television, just listen to music, whatever. They don't really want to tackle anything. the simple-minded, the naive, are the ones that are most susceptible. Now, notice what it's doing here. It's talking to us at different, you know, at the very beginning of our life. Okay? When we still have a chance. Because the Proverbs, in fact, the wisdom literature itself, you know, the Psalms, the Proverbs, the Ecclesiastes, they're for the young, written primarily for them. I mean, what you start off with in the first chapter, notice, listen to the words of your father, instruction of your mother. We got into that. Okay, this is you know, the first 10 chapters are, you know, lessons of a parent to a child. And part of that is the personification of wisdom. Now, these are good things at any time. Okay, this is why a lot of it's quoted in the New Testament. You don't want to remain simple because people will use you. If you don't learn to think, you're going to be very easy to manipulate because you don't know what's going on. Okay. Then it goes, and scoffers delight themselves in their scoffing. You notice that a lot of this today, these are people that mock anything. They'll mock anything human, anything divine. But that's all they got. Now, it's very powerful if you haven't got a strong, you know, sense of self-esteem. Okay? It kind of hurts when, you know, your peers and everything start to mock you. Okay? It's a form of bullying. Okay? In fact, it says they delight themselves in how, you know, clever they can be and the things they say to put you down. But that's all they got. I mean, if you start to say, well, you know, what's your position? Do you have one? What's the facts? Where are you coming from? What's your logic in this? They can't give you any of that. And a lot of times it's contradictory anyway. I mean, you know, Jesus goes, okay, here comes John the Baptist, and he doesn't eat anything, he doesn't drink anything, he's got a demon. Okay, here comes the Son of Man, and he tries to, you know, fit in a little bit better, you know, so he's eating and drinking, and you go, he's a wine bibber and a glutton. You can't win with these people. All they want to do is deride. But the deriders, wise up. How long will you delight in that, knowing that there's nothing there? Or even worse, the fool. This is the one that chooses a certain path. The fool comes up a lot in Proverbs, in Ecclesiastes. These are the individuals that wander off from God. It's not that they don't know any better. These are the ones that are the most culpable because they know. They know the knowledge, and it says they hate it because it goes against, it restricts them from the things they want to do. So where does that leave them? Wisdom's still knocking away. It goes, because, you know, I called and you did not respond. Okay, I put out my hand. In fact, you know, I put up both hands to try to bring you in. What happened? Well, no one paid attention. No one. Isn't that sad? This is the way of the world. It's trying to warn us, you know, don't get caught up in these things. They neglected all my counsel. They did not want my reproof. They didn't want to be corrected. They didn't want to be shown the right way. They didn't want to be set along the right path. Okay. So what's a wisdom eventually going to do? In fact, you might say, what is God eventually going to do? Okay. Continues. I will laugh at your calamity. You like to mock? I will mock at your dread when it comes. In full force. I will, you know, when your dread comes like a storm, that is, when God's judgment comes, you know, the thing, dread here is not just a fear of something. We're not looking at the emotion. We're looking at the source of it. When the thing that produces fear in you comes, what do they fear most? Well, they may not want to admit it while they're mocking or, you know, while they're hating knowledge, but they're fearing judgment. And eventually it's going to come like a storm. Okay? The the calamity is going to come, you know, like a whirlwind. Okay, we're used to tornadoes, you know, in the Midwest. Even some of them touch down in California. They're devastating. They clear the land. And that's what God's judgment is going to do. In fact, he says, in your distress and in your anguish when it comes, God's going to laugh. Okay? Distress, these are two words in anguish that mean to narrow down and compress. When all your problems seem to just kind of get in on you, okay, and you seem like you can barely breathe and there's no way out, okay, what are you going to do? By that point, it's gone too far. Notice the change here between, you know, the verses preceding and the next verse. It goes from the second person to the third person. As if goes, you know, when it directed it, you know, the conversation to them, there was some hope. Okay? But now, it goes, not you anymore, but they. Okay? Now, wisdom's walking off. Okay. They, you know, will now call me. And I won't answer. Okay. They will diligently. They'll get up early in the morning. In fact, that's what's hidden in this language. Early in the morning, you know, when it's just barely you can see at the dawn of day. I mean, they're so eager, you know, they're looking for something, for some kind of relief in their desperation, and goes, they're not going to find me. They're not going to find me. Why? Because their mind and their heart is already bent the wrong direction. Because they hated knowledge. There's that fool again. They hated knowledge. And they did not choose the fear of the Lord. Go back to verse 7 in this chapter. The writer's already said, what is the fear of the Lord? It's the beginning of wisdom. Because they didn't have a fear of God to begin with, they didn't even get on the path of wisdom. All these things that could have helped them, that could have instructed them, that have kept them, you know, mature, they worked on their relationship with their God, they chose not to. In fact, God just got in the way. Didn't like it at all. Okay. In fact, if you go to Romans, the third chapter, you look at the context of Their mouth is an, you know, their throat is an open grave. With their tongue they speak lies. You know, the poison of asps is on their lips. Bitterness and cursings are in their mouth. Their feet are quick to chase evil. Their hands are full of blood. Why? Because there's no fear of God in their eyes. What's happening to our society? We've taken God out of it, and things are getting progressively worse. No morals. Nothing to keep them. Yeah, you know, to tell them what's right or wrong. And people are doing what they want. And a lot of times it's violent and it's sensual. You know, we're seeing the evidences of taking God out of things. So how's that working for you guys? She goes on and just elaborating on that. Because they did not accept my counsel. In fact, they spurned, I mean, it's getting progressive, they spurned all of my reproof, all the things I could have done to help them. I mean, the simple and whatever, they don't want adversary. I mean, that's the new trend in schools is, you know, you don't come down on the kids, you know, you don't give them hard tests or anything else because you want to build up your self-esteem. Okay? Suicide is increased. Bullying has increased. It's not working. Okay? A little adversity is not bad. Okay, you want to know that you're not always going to win. You need to learn, but that's not the end of it. Yeah. Well, somebody once said, what's a good fighter? A good fighter is not someone who wins every fight. A good fighter is the one, once he gets knocked down, he's on the canvas, you know, that he can force himself to get back up and get back into the fight. You have to learn that, okay, life is full of failure. How do you treat that? You can't put yourself in the driver's seat because, you know, once you realize that self can't accomplish too much in this life. But what we looked at last week with wisdom, when you humble yourself before the presence of God, He'll exalt you. When you realize you can't do it by yourself, you're going to realize how much you can accomplish in this life with God with you. This is what wisdom is trying to teach us. If you continue on your path of what you're going, look what wisdom has to say. They will continue to eat of their own way. That's why they'll never learn, and it'll get worse and worse. Suicides are up. Okay? They will satiate themselves on their own devices, and the devices, counsel, their own wisdom, whatever. You know, they'll fill themselves with that. Ephesians 4 talks about the ignorance that's within them. Most of them say what they don't know. It's what there's in them that's wrong. What they perceive as reality, that's not reality. All the falseness that they've accepted, that's what's pulling their life down. And they're satiated on it. Think of a tick on a dog, how it gets bigger and bigger and bloated and, you know, with all the blood and stuff. Yeah. Okay. That's what they're satiated on. Or if you want a biblical example, think of when God got mad at the Israelites. You want something to eat? I'll give you quail out the buku and manna everywhere. He stuffed it down them ad nauseum until they got totally sick of it. Okay, that's what God is doing to people that choose the wrong way in life. He's going to rub their nose in it. He's going to cram it down their throat. He's trying to show them it doesn't work. When are you going to turn back? But many of them, most don't. Second to last verse. So the waywardness, that word rebellion, you know, getting off the track, whatever, of the naive will kill him. You know, literally, physically, mentally, spiritually, every level. The complacency of the fool will destroy him. This is an apt one for our times. Jeremiah 22:21, I spoke to them in their prosperity, but they would not listen. I mean, adversity often makes converts. But you make a man, you know, satiated with wealth, that he feels satisfied. He's got a good job. He's got all the toys. He's got everything he needs. He thinks he's done it all himself. And he doesn't think he needs God. Everything's fine. Yeah. Now try to get him out of that comfort zone. Yeah. That's a bigger temptation than the adversity. And that's what's really going to destroy most, especially in this country. Yeah. Last verse of hope. But the one who listens, wisdom says, will live securely. You live securely. That is, you know, if God is for you, Paul says, who can be against you? I mean, when you got the God who created all things, you know, in your corner, what can men do? And there's a peace of mind there. You know, as bad as the world gets around us, I mean, you can sit there and watch, you know, Fox News all day long, you know, or, you know, turn on some of the talk radio shows. Yeah, and listen to, you know, Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh or whatever and go, oh, everything's going down the tubes, you know. Yeah, well, whatever. But it doesn't matter to the Christian. We're going to, you know, God's going to find a way to use it, and we got to follow God's lead. Okay? In fact, if it gets worse, maybe that's good for us. You know, get us out of our complacency. Get us going, you know, more and more to turn people to God. To rely on him more and more, because it's going to be evident you're going to have to. Okay? The last verse, and you'll be at ease from the dread of evil. Okay? Not only just the evil, but the source of it. There's that word dread again. Yeah. What do we pray? Deliver us from the evil one. God's not going to deliver us from evil because it's a viable tool for him. In order to, you know, to use in order to bring back to the good side. But for the devil himself, you don't have to worry about it. God's already delivered you from it. You're protected from the very source of all evil because you've listened to wisdom and follow God. You fear him more than you fear anything else. And you love him more than you love anything else. That's the lesson this morning. Chapter runs out. Can't go any farther. If you want to be right with your Creator, to draw nearer to him, we talked about that last week. If there's anything we can do to help, you know, if you need to know more about it, if you want to know just the foundational things in order to get back in a relationship, you know, with God, we can provide that. If you even need to know, you know, we can go back further than that. You know, if you need some help in discovering, you know, why is there a God? How is there a God? You know, what's his word? You know, we've got to lay the groundwork. We can do that for you and bring you up to the point where, you know, you can, you know, start to believe very sincerely, you know, on proper evidence, the things that you need to do, the hearing the word, believing it, you know, confessing him as your Lord, repenting of your lifestyles, entering the waters of baptism. We got some water back here. To wash away your sins. Okay, we're going to get into that next week, I think. A little bit more on that if you want to come back for it. Or if you just need the prayers of the congregation as you're struggling as a Christian to try to please God to the best of your ability, let us know what your needs are. And this is what we're here for. This is what God put the church together for, so as members we can help support and strengthen one another. Whatever your needs are, won't you come as we stand to sing?